Chuck Grahl is one of nine former and current Circle K managers in Las Vegas suing the convenience store chain for allegedly intentionally misclassifying them as store managers to keep them from getting overtime pay. The lawsuit claims the employees should not have been given management titles because their daily tasks included unloading boxes, cleaning restrooms, and other non-management duties. Las Vegas attorney Andy Remfer represents the workers. He says Circle K cannot categorize these as managers, as they were employees who just cleaned the store and worked the cash registers. A Circle K spokeswoman was unavailable for comment. Joining us in the studio is Andy Remfer. He is with Luke Cogburn in Las Vegas, also former Circle K employee Chuck Grahl. But first, we turn to an interview taped Tuesday afternoon with UNLV Boyd Law School professor Ruben Garcia. Ruben Garcia is the author of the book Marginal Workers, How Legal Fault Lines Divide Workers and Leave Them Without Protection. Ruben Garcia, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So under the Federal Labor Standards Act, who can be exempt from earning overtime pay?
Workers who are classified as executives, administrative workers, professional workers, or computer employees. So it's just a set of categories in the statute that the Department of Labor then has to create regulations around to determine factually who is exempt from overtime.
But presumably then not the person you run into behind the cash register.
That's the, I guess, the basis of the dispute, which is, do these workers do enough, spend enough of their time doing administrative or supervisory duties to make them exempt from overtime?
Mm-hmm. So how is Nevada state labor law different than federal law in defining who is a supervisor and who isn't?
Plaintiff's attorneys are looking to the state law for a little bit more room in terms of saying, well, that these people are not really supervisors, they're not really exempt from the law. But Nevada is actually, as far as state law goes, is not as generous to plaintiffs as some other states close by, notably California. So many of these lawsuits are basically going to track federal law in Nevada.
Mm-hmm. Do these labor laws vary much state by state? For instance, does a Circle K employee enjoy certain rights in California but not in Nevada?
Oh, absolutely. In California, you're going to have a different minimum wage. You're going to have different differences in terms of when overtime kicks in, 8 hours a day versus 40 hours in a week. You're going to have different break time rules. You're just going to have a lot of differences in state law. And yet Nevada also has a favorable, in many respects, a favorable law for workers as well. And so it's just really going to vary. You're talking about a national chain that has to comply with differences in the law in all 50 states. Mm-hmm. And yet some of these principles of exempt workers for, you know, workers that are really, you know, executives or professionals like lawyers or accountants, doctors, they're pretty clear throughout the country. It's just these particular workers, retail workers in particular, where we've seen just a bevy of lawsuits throughout the country in terms of alleged misclassification. So what's going on allegedly at Circle K and other retail chains is just really the tip of the iceberg in terms of the volume of litigation over overtime misclassification and minimum wage violations.
Hmm. So how often do employers try to get around paying overtime by reclassifying employees like this?
Well, if you look at the growth of litigation in this area, you would maybe assume that they try it a lot, that they try it regularly. You could also, on the other hand, assume that the law is murky enough that they're not sure about where the line is. As I was saying, you know, they're trying to go right up to the line in terms of exemption, and you know, maybe and I think it's true that the regulations don't always provide the best guidance for when a person should be exempt from overtime. But it is true that this is the fastest growing area of litigation in the country. So you could take something from that in the sense that maybe, you know, there is a lot of misclassification going on. And I think that, as I said, I think there is certainly definite cases of that happening. Whether this is one of them, I don't know.
So what do you think accounts for that flourishing of litigation based on the Fair Labor Standards Act in recent years?
Well, a few things account for it. I think, first of all, wage stagnation is one of the main areas where people are not getting by on the wages. Even earning a little bit over the minimum wage is not, at least the federal minimum wage, is not a living wage in the United States today. So when workers are pressed like that, they might look for other alternatives, litigation alternatives, to try and basically to get what they need to live. That's one factor. Another factor is just the Department of Labor has gone back and forth on this a bit in the recent years, and President Obama is looking to change the rules again, and so that will create some more uncertainty, at least when those regulations go through, say in a year or so. And then finally, you know, there's also the idea that these can be lucrative lawsuits for attorneys and sometimes for the plaintiffs. So there is attorney fee shifting that allows plaintiffs to recover if they prevail. So that is incentivizes a certain number of people to bring these lawsuits. And again, these lawsuits are growing fast, and attorneys need to be able to bring, you know, meritorious claims. And so that one of the reasons why that's happening is because people are able to recover attorney's fees if they win.
The Obama administration is implementing some changes to the Fair Labor Standards Act. Do you anticipate that those changes will reduce the amount of litigation in years to come?
I don't think they will. I think that the main thing that would reduce litigation in years to come would be probably, as I said, actually trying to deal with this wage stagnation and inequality that's going on, so people don't feel like they have to, you know, resort to litigation to make ends meet.
Ruben Garcia is a professor at UNLV's Boyd School of Law. Professor Garcia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So are you employed in the Las Vegas retail industry? Do you feel your employer is trying to find ways to get around paying overtime? If you work in the retail industry, tell us what your situation is. Or if you used to work in retail, tell us if you quit over issues of pay or the lack of time off. You can reach us at 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. We are also here on Twitter. Tweet us anytime at KNPR News or post your comment at our website, knprnews.org. Chuck Grahl is with us. He is a former Circle K employee in Las Vegas. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
When did you first go to work for Circle K?
94, 95.
So it was about 20 years ago.
Yes, sir.
What was your job like on a day-to-day basis?
Busy. 8 to 10 hours a day. Working behind the register, working with the customers, and we pretty much had to do. You very seldom had any, but it was, you know, maybe one other person with you at any given time. So, if you had to give them breaks, so you're running the register, and Circle K's policy with only nobody in line. You're pretty much on the register, you know, 6 to 7 hours a day once you've got your paperwork done.
So how long were you working for Circle K before they gave you the new title?
Well, I started as a manager with Circle K.
Okay, you started.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. I had worked for AMPM prior to that, and they had recruited me over to Circle K.
Okay, so did they tell you that because you were a supervisor that your hours would – you were exempt from overtime pay? That you would be subject to that?
Well, basically what we were told was that it was a right-to-work state, number one. And number two, that because we were on a salary, we were exempt from any type of overtime. And it was our responsibility to prevent overtime. And the first first 10, 12 years of work for Circle K, if you did have to work overtime, the supervisor would say, hey, take a day off. You know, you worked a lot of hours last week, take an extra day off. But in the last 3-4 years, that philosophy just disappeared completely.
If you were a store manager, why didn't you have more say over your own hours?
We had to make sure that the store was covered property, and it was our responsibility to cover if somebody was late, if somebody called in sick. It was our responsibility to make sure that the store was always ready for business.
Mm. Were you the only supervisor or manager at your Circle K location dealing with these employment issues?
In my store, yes.
In your store. But were there others? Were you hearing other stories at the same time?
Yes. You know, the managers would talk together, you know, everybody was that way. I mean, everybody was being told the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then they brought out these expectations. 3 years ago, they sent out expectation sheets now, meaning what a manager had to do. And the hours just kept piling on that we were required to do.
Now, I should note, too, that we reached out to Circle K and invited them to participate in this program, and they have not responded to that invitation. So did you ever work more than 40 hours a week, or well more than 40?
Always.
How many hours in a typical week?
I was averaging between 60 and 70 hours a week. We were required by the expectation list to be there at 5 in the morning, and we couldn't leave before 3. And Monday through Friday. Saturday, we were required to be there from 6 in the morning until noon. And then my supervisor and the other supervisors also sent out emails that if somebody calls in sick, we couldn't allow somebody to work that shift if it was overtime. If we had an available person to do it that was not overtime, that'd be fine. However, over the last few years, they have cut the amount of hours that we were allowed to spend to a bare minimum. Virtually, you never have anybody to call that wouldn't be on overtime. Mm. So we were required to work the overtime.
How long was it before you began to look online for help in either shrinking your workload or getting paid for the extra hours?
This last year and a half that I was with my new supervisor, it really got worse to the point where they were even calling the store to see if you were there at 5, and if you left at 5 minutes to 3, somehow they already knew it. Hmm. So they started communicating that you're required to do this. And then when we would turn our paperwork in on Fridays, which would for the pay period, if you had overtime, you were grass. I mean, you were in trouble. And you had to, well, why'd you have overtime? Why didn't you work it type of thing? And it got worse and worse. And then a friend of mine that had, the company had terminated him, or they had demoted him and then terminated him. Because we started complaining about, good grief, we're working 70, 80 hours a week now, you know. So we started complaining, and that's when they just harassment is a bad word. I'm just saying that they created more difficulties for us. Mm-hmm. And he had heard about the lawsuit in Florida. So around September, I think, October of last year, he told me about it. So I started going online finding out this, and I found
a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff.
I do want to ask you a little more about that in a few minutes. And sure. I also want to bring Andy Remfer into the conversation. Andy Remfer is an attorney with the Cogburn Law Firm, and he is representing Chuck Grawl in his lawsuit against Circle K. Andy Remfer, have you found that this is a common occurrence?
We have. It's not just endemic to the retail convenience store situations. It happens throughout industries, whether it be gas stations, whether it be casinos, credit unions. We've seen this throughout all types of industries.
Hmm. So how many former and current Circle K employees are you representing in this action?
As of today, I believe we have 59 current and former employees. There are only 3 former employees, and there are about 56 current employees.
Okay, what are you asking for? What's the lawsuit asking for?
Well, as Mr. Grawl indicated, the intent of the lawsuit is to simply recompense them for the time that they worked in excess of 40 hours. And as Chuck said, he's working on average about 60 to 65 hours per week. That's the same story we've heard from everyone in his field. And let's be clear, his region encompasses both Southern Nevada and the entire state of Arizona. We have approximately 25 people in Nevada, and then the bulk of the rest is from Arizona. All those current employees say to a man or a woman the exact same thing, which is they're working on average about 60 to 65 hours, so that's 25 hours per week of overtime that they're seeking to be paid.
Now, Chuck Grawl, you complained at some point. You finally decided to talk to supervisors. What happened at that point?
All of a sudden, my review for last year came in April, and I got a tremendous review. The company, the store made money. Then after I started complaining, about that time we started complaining, I couldn't do anything right. My store couldn't do anything right. My supervisor would come in and scream and yell at my people on the sales floor. So we started complaining about that also. And then my supervisor comes in, "You're the only store that complains about me." You know, I says, "No, that's not true. Managers talk. I know the store down the street has complained about you. You just can't yell at people on the sales floor. It's not right. Do it in my office if you want, but it's not right." So from that point on, I'm not doing this right. I'm not doing enough of this. I'm not doing enough of that. They're checking what time did Chuck leave, so forth and so on. And I, because of the intimidation, I was staying until 4 or 5 o'clock every night. And if a person called in sick, I just went ahead and worked the shift because I didn't want to be hassled on Friday because I spent overtime.
Hmm. How is this impacting your life outside of Circle K?
Well, I went 9 weeks with only 2 days off because my assistant manager had surgery, and you just never see anybody.
Yeah, you've got a family. You've got your wife. You've got two adult daughters. You've got a granddaughter.
Exactly, I was trying to work there until I retired, and I was willing. I'd been with the company a long time, and it used to be a very good company to work for. But the last 3-4 years have just they're working their managers to death, and they don't seem to care.
What has this done to your health?
My wife says I was wound too tight, whatever that means. My blood pressure was up. I was taking more blood pressure medicine. I couldn't sleep at night because you're so stressed out by the time you get home. It takes a while to unwind, and then all of a sudden you got to be back up at 4 o'clock in the morning to be there at 5, because if you're not there at 5, at 5:15, you'll get a phone call.
Hmm. Yeah. All of that, and then, you were fired in February.
Yes.
Did they tell you why they were firing you?
They came in on a Friday morning and said that my services were no longer needed. Prior to that, they had my inventory. I was working in a very tough store. And my inventory shrink was averaging between 1% and 1.3, 1.4.
Inventory shrink, what does it help us understand?
Stolen merchandise that's left the store without being paid for. Mm-hmm. Well, the company goal is less than 1%. And they require me to do what they call scan audits to find out exactly what we lost in any given week. Well, when you're running the register 6 hours a day and it takes 2 hours to do paperwork, these scan audits have to come after that because the customer always has to come first. So there's a lot of managers that are staying until 6-7 o'clock at night to do these scan audits. And all these scan audits are telling you that they stole 2 more 18 packs of beer. And we had a no confront, no talk to policy when we see somebody walk out the store with product.
Hmm. Did they hang that on you anyway?
Yeah. They hang that was their I am assuming that's their excuse because the paperwork I got when I was terminated was that my services were no longer needed.
Hmm. Working backward, doing the calculations, your salary was about $800 a week, about $41,000 a year. Have you calculated how much the Circle K's alleged misclassification cost you? I mean, have you put a dollar figure on that? of what you should have been paid but weren't these years?
Andy probably could answer that question.
He's
the one that told me. I never multiplied it out myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I never anticipated that this circumstance would happen.
Yeah. Andy Renfer, I gather you've got out the calculator.
We have, and if you look at it just purely from the time and a half of overtime that Chuck is owed at $30 an hour, I mean, it adds up to about $120,000 plus the penalties that are inclusive of the penalties that are owed under the statute. So it's significant for each individual employee. Look, what happened was Circle K stole the value of the labor from Chuck and his co-employees. They've not paid for it. They've taken the benefit of it. They've taken away not just the time that he worked and the money that's owed, but as he's alluded to, is that time that he spent with his family that was no longer valuable. I mean, the stories that I hear from these people are heart-wrenching. They like Chuck, and there's literally every person has said to us, we've gone weeks without vacations. We had a woman who went 5 months without a vacation, who couldn't go get a surgery because she couldn't get time off to work. I mean, and that's not unique to these individuals. It's depressing, and it's been pushed on them for the past 3 or 4 years. And as Professor Garcia alluded to but didn't really hit upon, I think I know why this is going on from an economic standpoint. It's, if you allow me just quickly, Obamacare has recently defined full-time workers as people who work 30 or more hours. Chuck is basically two employees. If you look at the math of it, he's working 60 to 65 hours a week, i.e., that's two full-time employees under the Obamacare Act. Therefore, what they're doing is shifting his time worked from an employee who would otherwise have to be paid for insurance and health benefits to one person who's not getting that same benefit. So they're saving both the time and a half of overtime and the health pay that they don't have to pay for another employee. It's clear what's going on here.
We are talking about a legal action filed against the Circle K convenience store chain. Las Vegas attorney Andy Renfer represents a total of 59 current and former employees of the Circle K chain. One of them is former employee Chuck Grahl. Note again, we reached out to the Circle K chain and asked them to appear with us for this conversation, and we have received no response from Circle K. Andy Renfer, you're a labor attorney here in Las Vegas. I talk a little bit about overtime pay. Who can be exempt from earning overtime pay?
Well, as Professor Garcia did discuss, it's people who are properly have the independent discretion and authority to do their job. The example I use is, let's say you work at a store and you're the manager and it's a hot day, but in the front of the store you have a sweatshirt and sweatpants on your mannequin, but obviously that's not going to sell that day. If you're a true manager, you can walk up to that mannequin and put on shorts and a t-shirt because that's what it takes to get the job done. In Chuck's scenario, therefore, he can't move things around. He can't tell that Budweiser delivery truck, no, we have enough stock today, we're not going to take it. Or, I'm going to move that candy shop around, just make sure that it's properly positioned so it sells more candy that day. No, he doesn't have that authority. So people who have the authority are managers. They can do their job on a daily basis without control from their supervisor, and they can get the job done. Now, that's the first test, is the management test. And the other part of it is, do you manage two or more people, not inclusive of yourself? Chuck never managed two or more people. He basically had one person at a time, and he was doing his job. And if you don't have two or more people under your wings, you're not managing people. You're just watching them do their job as well. Professor Garcia also mentioned executives like myself or attorneys who are learned professionals, doctors, accountants, that type of thing, who are properly exempt from overtime. And, of course, computer people and administrative people such as executive assistants would also be properly classified as exempt from overtime. That's just the general category. But in the range of things, in which is the Obamacare – or not the Obamacare, but Obama's recent attempts to regulate the Fair Labor Standards Act, he's talking about the salary basis test, people who make from a range of about $22,000 to $100,000. He's been trying to narrow that and say we need to make that smaller as to people who are exempt from overtime, because people who are making $30,000 a year probably aren't management and should be getting paid overtime. So that's what he's been trying to address, and I agree with Professor Garcia, is that even though that will narrow the field, you're still going to see litigation on these points.
So if I was hearing you a moment ago, you were pointing out that if Chuck is not overseeing two employees or more, he's not technically a supervisor. Is that a function of Circle K's not allowing additional people to be there, lest they have to pay overtime?
Correct.
So there's an irony in that.
There's an immense irony in that. The fact that they don't allow him to have the proper number of staff to get his job done actually makes him exempt from overtime, so he should be getting paid overtime. The greater irony, in my opinion, is the fact that his paychecks say 40 hours a week. Their policies say he has to work 56, but he's actually working 66 on average. So the records show that he's working 40, but then their requirements show that he has to work 56. So on paper alone, they have a 16-hour discrepancy. And look, that's fact. I can say that with 100% confidence. And if Circle K was in the room today, they can't deny that. So the irony is they're not paying him for the 16 hours, and they're not letting him have staff to get his job done. Hmm.
So what about you? Do you feel your employer is trying to get out of paying overtime? And are you working overtime without being paid for it? If you work in the retail industry, we'd like to know a little more about your situation. If you used to work in retail or perhaps gaming, did you quit over issues of pay or the lack of time off or the lack of overtime pay for extra time worked? You can tell us your story at 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. Or write to us at knprnews.org. Scott joins us from Las Vegas now. Scott, thanks for calling and welcome.
Hey, how are you today?
Doing fine, thank you.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I'm not in the casino or retail market. I'm in the construction industry, and I'm in a very similar situation. I was hired as an intern, and I'm constantly, you know, everything that I submit to companies for work and whatnot has to be approved by the operations manager prior to being emailed, so that I don't put their company in a position, in a bad position. Hmm. And I've been required to show up on the job between 6 and 6:30 every morning, and I'm not allowed to leave until 4:30 each day. And if the day requires, I stay longer. And so I feel I'm basically in the same position as folks that you're speaking about at Circle K, one of them who happens to be my wife.
Mm-hmm. Andy Renfer, is Scott's story in the construction industry? One you've heard before?
Yeah, it's very common. In fact, we do represent current employees in the construction industry, and it's probably more common in construction than it is in most other industries because it's so hard for them to track the hours they work since they're not physically at a location where they can just clock in and clock out. You know, they have to either drive to a job site, they have to get off of the job site. And frankly, construction workers they don't usually have a pen and pencil to write down their hours, and they're not worried about that. They're worried about putting that last brick and putting it down in a row. That's the most important thing for them, having grown up in that industry. So I can sympathize with Scott, and I definitely know what he's talking about. That off-the-clock work and that not being paid overtime it's systemic in construction.
Scott, thanks very much for your call. We'll turn next to Ryan in Pahrump, who joins us. Ryan, thanks and welcome. Hi, Ryan, are you with us? No, I think Ryan is with us, but I don't think he's at the phone right now. So we'll try to get back to him in just a second. Scott had also mentioned something, Andy Renfer, that I wanted to ask you about, which is internships.
Mm-hmm.
Is there room? I would assume, because I've heard a lot of stories over the years, there's room for abuse in the realm of internships.
It's a hot button topic. I know that the Weinstein Film Company recently, for the Black Swan film, was hit for that, where unpaid internships for students and other types of people who work in internships that don't get compensated. I know that's been the norm socially for the past maybe 40 or 50 years, but it's not allowed under the Fair Labor Standards Act. Interns who don't get academic credit, and let's be clear about that, it has to be very specific. They can just walk off the job whenever they want. They can show up whenever they want. You don't tell them what to do. If you're telling them what to do and where to be, you should probably pay them for all the work that they perform on your job.
Hmm. Now, you also represent employees of the Orleans and Gold Coast casinos in a lawsuit alleging violations of the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act. You recently won conditional national class certification over allegations that board gaming rounded down employees' time. And for the non-lawyers among us, tell us a little bit about what this means and what it involves.
Rounding is you go back to your first and second grade math class, and that's simply what it means. When you round numbers, in other words, let's say you're at 8 hours and 7 minutes. Well, your lower number is 8 hours. But if you're over 8 minutes, you go up to the next increment. So you should go to 8 1/4. What we found with Boyd and what the federal judge recently certified for a national class is that Boyd, whenever you went over 8 minutes, still rounded down to the lowest increment. Now, having personally hand computed for our lead plaintiffs, we found that in a 3-year period, Boyd rounded down 4,500 minutes from one person alone to its benefit. In other words, it basically took that off of his clock. So what the judge did certify is the fact that the judge found from a national standpoint, because Boyd uses one timekeeping record, that Boyd was illegally rounding down everybody's time in increments and just basically taking the time off, even though they worked.
Hmm. With that action and with this action underway, it's hard to not think that there must be a lot of employers who are doing things like this to squeeze as much as they can. Do you have any sort of sense of what kind of dollar figure this would add up to in Las Vegas?
For Boyd Gaming, which had 10,000 current employees who could possibly be affected by this, and upwards of 20,000 to 25,000 employees, and you look at it on a daily basis, let's say it's taking 10 minutes of time off of each person's clock, you're looking at upwards of $150 to $300 million in damages. If everybody joins the class. And, you know, am I shocked that it happens? Yes. But having dealt with Circle K, having dealt with Boyd Gaming, having now sued MetLife for something similar, it doesn't really – I'm kind of just nonplussed by it. It doesn't shock me anymore. It is what it is. The employers will find every way, in my opinion, to sort of find a new way to skirt what's legal.
Our number is 702-258-3552, 702-258-3552. Danny in Las Vegas, thank you for joining us and welcome.
Hi. My question is, how do you prove a case? What evidence do you need? What records do you need to get in order to prove a case like this?
Andy Renfer?
The beautiful thing about these types of lawsuits is it's the employer's burden to disprove your allegations. That seems reversed because usually if you're a plaintiff, you have to prove your allegations. But the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act and even Nevada law says that an employer has the burden of keeping accurate time records. And that means the employer should make you clock in and clock out accurately every single day. Like in Chuck's case, therefore, since he's making the accusation he worked 66 hours, it's now on Circle K to disprove that. So people like Danny who come to us and say, well, I don't have any proof of it, that's actually incorrect because their statements alone can prove the accuracy of how much time they worked.
All right. Danny, thanks very much for your call. So Andy Renfer, is a lawsuit the only remedy for things like this? It's tempting to ask why the government's not doing more to check up on these things before you've got to go to court and people lose their jobs.
In 1938, when the Fair Labor Standards Act was passed, one of the congressional intent was to make private attorneys like myself what they call the private attorneys general. And that was the idea behind the Fair Labor Standards Act. They knew the Department of Labor couldn't properly staff and maintain enough attorneys to pursue these types of claims. So as Professor Garcia talked about, they do allow attorneys to get the fees if they succeed. And it's an incentive. But I have to kind of go back to the economic sense of it. Remember, every dollar that we recoup as attorneys' fees is taxable wages that the government recoupes that wasn't paid into the coffers. So I'm not trying to justify my own existence. I'm simply saying we're providing a public good because that money, which you're not getting compensated for in terms of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, we're putting that back into the system.
Mm-hmm. Las Vegas has a lot of low-wage service workers. What kind of worker protections are there in neighboring states like California and Arizona that would benefit employees here?
We do have in Nevada the labor commissioner, which is supposed to be there to protect employees like Chuck and employees at the other industries. And in California, you have something similar. You have the what's called FEHA, and I don't remember exactly what that acronym applies. I think it's the Fair Employment Housing Authority. But those types of agencies are supposed to be there to help you. The thing I will mention is a lot of employees come to me and they say, well, my employer said that I signed a settlement agreement, and therefore I can't sue for these types of back wages. That's absolutely 100% incorrect as it relates to the Fair Labor Standards Act. If you've signed a severance agreement or a settlement agreement that waives your right to pursue these types of wage claims, it's unenforceable as a matter of law. The federal government, in other words, the Department of Labor, or a judge has to approve these cases as a settlement basis because the government has an interest in the tax money to recoup.
Chuck Grawl, have you heard from current and former Circle K employees since taking this action? Have you started to hear from some of your former colleagues?
I still hear from several of my the store managers that are friends of mine that I've known for 15, 20 years. We stay in contact, and I have lunch with a couple of them every Wednesday or Thursday. And so I'm still in the loop as far as what's going on, you know, in the Circle K at this point in time.
What happens if you lose your case?
We've at least brought up the issue that this isn't right. Mm-hmm. People are being taken advantage of. It's just simply not right. There's a lot of good people working for Circle K, and these managers are working their hearts out, and for the benefit of somebody else.
Yeah. Chuck Grawl is a former Circle K employee, and Andy Renfer is an attorney with Cogburn Law Offices in Las Vegas, representing Chuck and a number of other Circle K employees in their suit. Again, we reached out to Circle K, asked them to join us for this conversation, and did not hear back. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.